To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. My name is Don Moore, and you're listening to Two Dimension, the comic book podcast with no direction. And sitting across from me is a man that said, it's the effort that really matters. And that can only be
Dr. Morbius,
a.k.a.
Al. Okay.
And on my right, never quite said it, but I think it applies. If it's not there, people will generate it. Can only be Mr.
How you doing, everybody? It's Rook.
Again, two times in a row.
The three of us.
Yeah, and this show's dedicated to Dallas,
who's building a nursery right now.
That's right. That's right.
That's a big life changer.
Yeah, it is a life changer.
Actually, Ellie, if you're listening, currently he's slacking. He tells me he's on break playing video games, so you need to whoop him into shape. Get him working.
He's got time before the baby comes. So,
But we're all about comics here, and not nurseries.
And comic book accessories.
And comic book accessories.
If you guys don't mind, I do have something I want to talk about. Rook laughs at me every time we go to the store and I find an old paperback of this.
Oh, Dennis the Menace.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I like the old Dennis the Menace comic strip from the 50s. I wasn't around in the 50s, but I love to see the reprints. Well, Hank Ketcham was the cartoonist behind that, but there's two men that did the comics in the very beginning. The artist was Al Weisman, and the writer was Frank Toole.
I did not know that.
Fred Toole. I didn't either. I never bought these. A good friend of mine, you know, when I was a kid, everybody had a stack of comics. My friend had some superhero comics, but he had a lot of the Harvey comics. Believe it or not, he had a lot of Archie comics, and when I was a preteen, I'd always make fun of him, and then later I started buying them once I was in my mid-teens. But he had some Dennis the Menace comics, and I always read them. To me, at the time, I thought they were old-fashioned, but I grew to love these. He worked in a style to look like Hank Ketcham, but he had a bit of a tighter style. It looks like some of the Japanese, you know, manga from back in the 50s and 60s. I'll tell you, the guy was a master design, and he's also really good at silhouettes on figures. He did large, you know, full-page drawings. The Hernandez brothers were being interviewed one time, and they brought up about the Dennis the Menace. I guess there was another cartoonist that worked for them, and they never knew their names because they were never listed on here. It was always Hank Ketcham. But they were saying, hopefully some of you, readers out there would know. And I thought, yeah, sure. Anyway, they just, Paper Cuts is the company that put this book out. Yeah. They've been doing the old Peyo stories of the Smurfs, which are quite nice. But the production on this as well, they have a bunch of, forwards by, what was the guy?
Bill Ray.
Yeah, Bill
Fred
Ray.
Fred Hembeck.
Yeah, Fred Hembeck, Bill Ray. And Al Weisman's son talked about it in the beginning.
Yeah, Jim Weisman does the forward on this.
So yeah. Hank Ketcham did the newspaper strips, but these guys did the comic book.
Yeah.
Was it like a Dell comic book or something like that?
I think Fawcett.
Fawcett put it
out. I think Fawcett. But the interesting thing on it was Fred Toole and Al Weisman, you know, the writer and artist, were both in advertising, and they were friends of Ketchum's. And I don't know if Ketcham worked solely as a cartoonist or if he worked in advertising at one point, but they were good friends. Dennis the Menace was a really popular comic strip. These guys are friends, and they just put out, you know, I guess Ketcham got them to do a comic book. They did it. The comic book sold just all over the place. They said that in the foreword that the entire print run sold out. And it says, you're happy if you get like 40% of your print run. It all sold out. And so they basically just left advertising and did the comic. And they did it for a long time. Now, the son did talk about, he didn't go over in detail, but he said that the father didn't like being a shadow, you know, because his name wasn't on it. It was always Hank Ketchum. And, you know, the guy was greatness. The lettering was great.
That's nice.
The stories are fun. And it's kind of funny that, you know, they're all like, you know, four or six page stories. And they're just greatness. My favorite one, I had two Dennis the Menace comic books that somebody gave me in a pile. They didn't have covers on them.
Oh, cool.
And when I was a kid. And I always had them at the house. One time I come home on leave from the Navy, and my brother had one of those in the bathroom that he and I shared. And I'm looking at it, and there's one where Dennis the Menace and his friends took air ducts and built a giant slide. It's a one-page drawing. I was like, God, this guy's greatness. Bill Ray at the end starts talking more about it, that how they had a problem, the two cartoonists, because Hank Ketchum was making millions. You know, he owned the strip, and these guys basically just got a regular wage. And even though they work closely, but, you know, that's the problem, is if you're a newspaper artist, and, you know, you got a strip, it's successful, you're making the money, and you hire people, you know, at a regular wage. Kind of a lopsided thing. But anyway, I'm happy that they put this volume out. It's just greatness.
This, I may screw this up, but it seems to me like this Owen Fitzgerald guy did more work for DC. I could be wrong. I think he was an artist that may have done some of the early Bob Hope and Jerry Lewis humor
books.
Yes,
he did.
He did. That was him. Oh, he's great. Yeah.
He is greatness. Great, Owen Fitzgerald is greatness.
He was I think he was an animator, too, I think.
Owen Fitzgerald, there's a, I think it's Shane Glines, you know, an artist. He's on Facebook, and he's always posting about, you know, Roy Patterson, Owen Fitzgerald, all these guys, because they did work for, those old magazines in the 40s and 50s. Can't think. Parade? Not Parade. Anyway.
Like Argosy or something like that.
But, anyway, Owen Fitzgerald, he did a bunch of, there was one called Moronica. Instead of Veronica, it was Moronica. And it was kind of like a stupid girl, you know. And there was several of them. It wasn't just one. There was one, it was a blonde girl. They're all 40s style, and she was the ditz. You know, Moronica was another one. But they were, you know, short 6-8 page stories. I had one of a 1 page story, and I can't remember what her name was. Something Starlet, but it was a young girl trying to be an actress.
Oh yeah, something like Violet Starlet or something. Yes, I've seen those reprints.
But it was a 1 page story that he posted on Facebook, and the girl, you know, she was attractive, but basically they called her to come in for a reading for a movie.
Yep.
So, all of a sudden, she's panicking, so she runs to the loan officer because she has to get fixed up. So, it shows her go to the loan office, and then she goes to this place that sells, you know, evening gowns and stuff, and she's telling the woman, I need the best you got. And then she goes to the beauty parlor and says, I need the works, and the hairdresser's got dollar signs over his head. Then it shows her show up, and she looks like, you know, Marilyn Monroe or any of these glamour women. And it says, okay, you need to go to makeup right away. And, you know, she's always shimmering. She's all lacquered and polished and made up. And then she comes out of wardrobe, and she looks like it's a horror movie. She looks like a witch, and she's kind of pissed off because her hair is all haggard and all this money that she put herself in the hawk for. And that was the type of work he did.
Yeah.
And Shane Glines talks about that you can tell it's him, but it was a real simple style he was working in. Whereas some of those magazine work he did, illustrations and covers, it was a lot more intricate and real pattern design. The Dennis the Menace work he did, I knew of his work. It's not in this book, but it's not as tight as Al Weisman. It was real loose, and sometimes it was looser than I didn't care for. But yeah, he worked on Dennis for a long time. He did the comics as well.
Yeah, those are fun books, man. I see more and more. They're taking the original comic books and scanning them because the printing is really nice.
Yeah.
And it gives it like kind of like you're actually reading the book itself or whatever. Digital, there's a website called Digital Comics Museum. It's free. You have to join, but it's free. And they have reprints of a lot of this stuff on there. It's public domain, though, so they don't want to go into, like, they don't want any trouble with Marvel and DC or Atlas or any of those companies.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff is public domain. You'd be surprised how much stuff is public domain, like Captain Marvel, Shazam and all that is, and stuff like that. I think some of those are on there. Not Dennis the Menace, but some of the starlit.
Well, I mean, what is it? 25, 70 year, 25.
I think now it's
25
more.
out of America. It's 75 years or more.
Yep.
In country when the creator dies.
Yeah. Yep.
Before
yep.
you can actually get.
It used to be less than that. Domain. It used to be less than that, but they, you know, they changed things or whatever. Disney changed things or whatever. Well, oh. whatever. Yeah. That's just the way it is right now. So, you got anything that you've been reading?
Oh.
Too much?
Not much, really. I'm really, really behind on my books. I'll be honest with you. It's been a lot of stuff going on. But overall, I've been reading novels and everything. So,
well, we talked about some.
Yeah, we talked about some of the novels last time we got together. So, but I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about this one,
Nailbiter.
Nailbiter.
There's a whole story around that. Okay, and this is a story about like why you should like you shouldn't judge something till you really get into it. You gave me that book, right? Now I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. I gave it like a really superficial glance. And I go, man, this is like really dark and I can't see the art. I go, geez, I don't know. But you know, I'll read it one day. So one day I'm sitting there, right? So I go, well, you know, I've got this book here. Why don't I check it out? I mean, like I said, at first I didn't care for the artwork. It was just like,
It is. It's
and it,
very
and
dark.
It was muddy
yeah.
and dark.
Yeah.
So I start reading the book and I go like, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't that bad. And I keep reading it, and I keep reading, and I go, yeah, this kind of works, actually, and I kind of like it. And now it's like, you know, you get to the end, and you're like,
damn it, where's the rest of it?
And then I started going, where's the rest of it? So, I mean, the story is, I guess you got to really look at stuff. You can't, you know, that's the thing about stuff grabbing you, you know what I mean? There's some stuff that, yeah. like, you see it on the shelf, and it grabs you, and maybe it's not that great. Some other stuff just doesn't grab you, but when you read it, it's actually a decent book. I don't care for serial killer stuff that much, but it was kind of like an interesting book. I guess there's like a town where a bunch of serial killers
are all from. Yeah, but there's something else going on here. I mean, this is only volume one that we've read. There's something else going on here that's a little darker, a little more sinister, a little more like cult-esque in a way.
Yeah, because there's a guy sent, he's called by some other guy that you know, some police guy in town, and he's sent to the town, and he's looking for the man, and he can't find him, and he gets involved with like a young police woman, and then you're finding out that there was a serial killer that lived there that got away with, you know, supposedly all these killings, and he lives there, and he's like the main suspect, but then other people are getting killed, and then you're seeing this, and all this is happening, and then at the end of the book, another officer comes in and she goes, well, yeah, there's, you know, the main guy in the book. He's there and he goes, you know, he's wanted for murder too. And you're going like, huh. And then the book ends and you're like,
yeah, you're like, oh, crap. Well, where does it go from here?
Because
where does
it go from here? And in the beginning, the guy was biting his nails.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, what's going on? So now I have to like.
Well, he wasn't biting his nails. He was biting his
another body's nails.
Oh, was he biting some? Oh,
yeah, he was biting the victim's nails. He was the nail biter killer or something.
It's a real like. It's a very good mystery story.
Yeah.
I've never seen this or heard of it. We came in. Al handed it to Rook, and you know he's laughing about it and asked if you have the next one, which to me is a plus. That,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
I recommend it.
Yeah, I recommend it.
This is another recommendation by Brittany from Yancey Street Comics.
Oh, there you go. Good for her.
I'm serious, Brittany. Pretty much if she recommends it at this point, I give up and I just go read it because she has not missed a single book for me. She recommended it to me. I picked up the volume one on Free Comic Book Day, actually, last year.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I figured, you know, I think they were selling them like 2-for-1s or something like that on graphic novels. So I picked it up and read it and I thought it was fantastic. I really, really liked it. So
yeah, no, but again, it's because of like, and I don't want to put down, I want to put down the colorist, because like I said, at first glance it was just muddy, but it does work. You got to really look at this book and read it. It reads well. It's a quick read. The artist does his best to interpret the storyline as good as possible. And sometimes our good interpretation of the story is sometimes better than actual rendering, because it doesn't stop you to just, oh my God, I got to look at this drawing. This is so great. The drawings are really good.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just that it's a little hard to look at because it is a little dark, you know. I think they're trying to make it dark because of the dark subject matter that they're approaching. They do play a little bit with color in different areas. Like, just for example, in when you break into issue 5, it's in black and white, or black and grays, really.
Yeah
lighter shades of gray.
Yeah,
I see some dark greens. And
you know, and then it jumps back into color again. So, I mean, it's actually kind of light in these panels in issue 5. But then it just goes right back to that darkness that you're talking about, you know.
Yeah, and it's done for, you know, whenever the story gets really dark and it gets, you know, the art gets really...
I think a lot of the storyline is happening at night. And that's why so much of it is so dark. And it's, you know, but it does, it kind of muds out a lot of it and it makes it very hard to see. But, I mean, it's well done.
It's a good story. But it's like everything else. It's like it happens with... Sometimes it happens with music and stuff. You'll get something, and on first glance, you go, that's okay, you know. And then all of a sudden, you one day go, maybe I'll listen to this again.
Yeah.
You're going like, hey, this is really good. You know? And you listen to it again, and that's really good. And that's the kind of feeling that I'm getting from that book. At first glance, I just was kind of like, that's okay. But then I read it, and I go... I read the first issue, I go, hey, this is good. And I get the second issue. So I read it all in one shot, you know, which is good. It, like I said, it's a quick read. It reads well. The art follows the storyline perfectly. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's a good book. I'll be looking for, hopefully I can get a deal on the second volume of it. Is it still being published? Is this individual issues?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's still being, it's an ongoing series. I really don't know.
You haven't followed. It was only last year, or 2014, I think it was. So.
Yeah,
I'll be checking it out. It's definitely worthwhile checking out, and, you know, there you go, from Image Comics.
Image Comic Books, Nailbiter.
Yeah, it's the style was more cartoony than I was expecting. When I say that, I prefer that type. It had a realistic look, but it did have a comic, you know, cartoony flow. The artwork is fantastic. Not reading the story, just looking at it. I completely understand what Al said, because sometimes, whenever I buy a new book or a new comic, I always open up, and usually it's the lighter stuff that I start reading first. Sometimes I get a Howard Chaykin book, who I love dearly, but I always save his for last. I start reading the other stuff first. This one would be one that I wouldn't read right away, but everything just glancing at the surface, it's fantastic and beautiful. And I always complain about some colors make everything muddy. You know, the colors in this are dark, but everything is just, it's crisp and clear all the way through, and the colors you can see is consciously coloring the pages the way you did, because they go from one spectrum to another even though they're dark. Really nice.
Yeah, you really got to go past the color and get into the art, because the like you said, the coloring is this, it's all night, it's all dark, but once you look at the art and the storytelling, it's all there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all there, and it all moves like I said. I mean, sometimes comic books, when I read them, it's like, why did I miss something? Because maybe something didn't, like, you know,
yeah, maybe something
didn't jive.
Right.
Oh, yeah. This one, I got it. I got it on first, you know, crack. So definitely go out and get a look. Can I? Who is it? Who are the? What? Okay, let me give props to the writer. Let's see here. Story by Joshua Williamson and art by Mike Henderson. Good stuff. Go out and get it from Image Comics.
You know, we always joke about this. When Image started out, they didn't do material that I was interested in. And even to this day, people always talk about the type of comics that they had done. But I buy so many Image comics now. And my daughter, you know, she's not a heavy comic reader, but she does go to the stores and picks them up. And they're always Image. She got Bitch Planet. She's gotten a series called Saints. Those are the two I remember. But there's she got a book called Low, which she said she hasn't read yet. She showed it to me, but I didn't have time when I went up there to read it.
Yeah.
It looked beautiful, but I just didn't make the time. But
well, what's funny is Dallas was in his solo episode a couple episodes ago. He was talking about how things going on with Marvel, and I would be like, you know, how I have no clue what's going on with Marvel or DC anymore.
I thought you were reading a lot of Marvel
books.
I really don't.
I was reading Secret Wars, but after that, I just kind of went, okay, yep, that was fun. I don't really care to expand on it any further. You know, Image really is... you can't talk about top two anymore, in my opinion. You have to say the top three. Yeah. You know, Image, Marvel, and DC. You know, the three of them are competing for the lion's share of the marketplace.
IDW is another one.
IDW is upcoming, and they've been very strong with everything they've ever shown. But I wouldn't put them in that upper echelon of production. No.
Well, there's a bunch of books. I read a lot of IDW books. Dark Horse, to me, was always number three, but I guess the only ones...
They've fallen off. They've really fallen off and disappeared.
Well, the only ones I really read are the creator-owned, like The Groove and Usagi Jimbo. You're right. Yeah. They have fallen off.
Well, you know what IDW does more so than Image? Image, I think, licenses or... I think Image's deal now... is that you submit a proposal and a book, and then they decide whether they're kind of distributed for you. You
they're,
know?
A boutique.
They're not going to take the ownership of it like the Marvel or the DC. Mm. I think that's why you're seeing so many creative concepts coming out of Image and so many varied concepts coming
which
out of
I'm
the
loving.
Image stables.
Which I'm loving. And the books my daughter gets aren't books I get, but whenever I see her, she hands them to me, and I read them, and they're good. I mean, they do a lot of good stuff. I really love those.
IDW is doing a lot with reprints. They've been reprinting a lot of like classic books, and they're doing these things that I can't afford, but my friend gets them every once in a while. There's artist edition, where what they do is they take the original art, if they can get it, from an entire series of books, maybe like four or five series of books, and they take it, they shoot the original art, original size, and they're putting these out as books. They're like over $100 or whatever, but I mean, I've only seen one. I haven't seen one in person, but I've seen the cover of. They're beautiful. So they're doing a lot of that stuff. And same with Fantagraphics, a lot of reprints too of classic stuff. So they do have their, you know, their niche or whatever, but it's more so like older things. I think they're doing a lot with Star Trek too. I think it's IDW Planet of the Apes and a few licensed things like that. Whereas Image is like, you know, doing a lot more different styles of things.
Yeah, I think Image really is the place to go if you've got like this wild idea that, you know, isn't going to work anywhere else. You know,
no, and you want to own it.
Yeah, you want. Well, and you want to. I assume that's what they do because it sure seems that way.
Yeah,
for many.
Oh yeah,
creators.
You still own it.
You still own it.
You know, Image is the place to go with your wild, crazy idea.
Like Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, like Walking Dead. I mean, there's so many different titles out of the Image stable these days. I can't even begin to list them. I mean, granted, whenever you hear Image comic books, to a lot of people, in their heads, they see Spawn or Savage
Youngblood
Dragon.
Which is still being published, both of those.
Right,
really?
But... Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But to me, Image Comics is this, like, you know, is the place where I can go to find something different, something not of the mainstream, not your typical spandex and capes, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, I mean, yeah, you're right, but spandex and capes is becoming very, you know, they're all over the place now with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're basically superheroes. You know, they're going to do all these variations and all these strange things, whereas Image will do something like that. There was this one that was a big deal for you, Peter Panzer Mouse or something like that. There was Chew from Image.
Chew is from Image as well.
Yeah, they're doing all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, they're going off. The only bad thing about Image, in some cases, not in all cases, if you go to a store,
they don't have it.
They have to be special ordered.
Yeah. Well, and you have to have a store that's willing to take the chances with some of these books. Because, I mean, you know, you order 100 of these books...
And you sit on them.
And you're going to end up sitting on them, you know. You only sell 5 of them. Well, shit, you got 95 books sitting there that you're going, all right, somebody buy this crap, you know.
So, and then they end up a few years later in the dollar bins, and you go, oh, well, look at that. You know, no wonder.
But, you know, that's also, I think, that's the risk with anything in this industry, too, you know. I mean... You know, who's to say that, you know, all new and different, amazing, spectacular, uncanny Avengers is going to work? You know, people might go, that's too many, you know, adjective naming the Avengers part. I just want the Avengers.
Yeah, I just want those 5 or 6 guys. I don't want, like, so-and-so. But, you know, the Avengers and all that stuff still is going to get the marquee space at the comic shop. It's going to be when you walk in... usually the first things you see is the Marvels and DCs, and then you see the Archies and the Independents, and which is fine. I mean, you know, that's what gets people in the door.
It's always going to be that.
They're the ones that they're making movies about. They're the ones that are like on T-shirts all the time, and you know.
Yeah, but I kind of question what's actually driving the industry these days. Is it the capes and is it the spandex and capes, or is it these smaller creators with their off the wall books? I mean, there's you got to look at the walls. I mean, there's more of these off the wall books, you know, out of the ordinary books sitting on the walls these days than there are the spandex and capes.
No, unfortunately, I'm sorry. But I just want to say one thing. Unfortunately, not every store, but some stores, not all of them. It's not. I know why they do it. They have to do it. But if you buy the book and it's bagged and sealed, you're not. I mean, you know, how are you going to look at it?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
How are you going to look at it? But I understand why they do it, because people are getting these books and like messing them up, and then nobody
the ones
wants
that
to
don't
buy
know,
them.
You know, your average Joe on the street walks up and bends the cover back and starts reading the book in the middle of the store. You know?
Yeah, exactly. So I understand why you have to do it, but on the other hand, you know, you got to. But again, the word of mouth thing. You said that Brittany, you know, told you about the book, and then you told me. That's how it happens. You know, it becomes viral or whatever. You pass it to somebody else or whatever. Yeah. You know?
Word of mouth is the antique word for viral.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nicer word. You know?
I prefer it.
Yeah, it's a nicer word. You know, viral. You know, oh, what did I catch?
That is true. I never thought of it. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the old-fashioned word or whatever. You know, so yeah, I mean, you know, again, go to the store. The trade paperbacks are the place where you can
find. Trades, I think, are a great place to pick up the off-the-wall stuffs, you know. But then again, you also miss some of the really great things. Like, if I would have picked up Chew in trade, I would have been furious. Absolutely. Everybody knows I don't like Chew. It didn't work for me.
Right.
But I picked up the first two issues in Solo.
Yeah.
So I spent, like, I don't know, like, What were they each? Like $3-4 a pop?
Yeah, you found like
$8 and then I turned around and sold the two of them for like $175,
$200,
So, you know, that works for me. If I would have paid the $14-15 for Chew in trade, I would have never been able to sell it for anything.
That is true.
You know, and I would have been furious because this crappy book would have been sitting on my shelf.
That is true, I mean, I guess with the trade, you can actually read it and go, well, this looks good. But, like, you're right. You looked at Chew and you said, oh, this looks interesting. But when you actually sat down and read it, you go, eh.
Oh, it was good. My daughter picked it up when I went up to Tallahassee. And whenever she gets it, I read it first. And I was reading it. I thought it was genius. Saying that, I wouldn't buy it. It just wasn't in my wheelhouse. But I was thinking, well, if she gets them, I'll read all the issues. I thought it was nothing but genius.
See, and I'm on the completely opposite end, and I find it to just be an absolutely atrocious and stupid concept.
But we talked about the beauty of this one time, and that's what was funny. But my daughter, when she was in school, and she came back home, and she handed it to me and said, here, you can have it. So you don't, well, no, I don't like it. Well, that's fine. But I was a little disappointed that I'll never find out what happened, because I'm not going to buy any more. As a matter of fact, Dallas, when we were talking about doing the show, he said, I need to read Chew. So I handed him the trade, and he didn't like it, and he just passed it on to somebody else. Oh, you know, he could have gave it back, I guess. But you know,
Don is just sitting here wishing somebody else would get into Chew so he could borrow the issues.
At least get them on Comicology.
It wasn't the type of book that I would want to go out and buy, but it is. It had my interest. I thought the artwork went with the story. I thought the story was clever. It's a popular comic, if you understand, and I'm glad. It's different than everything else I read. And that's what I was talking about is, you know, and Alan Moore even said this. He has no interest in recycling their old characters anymore, even though he's really good at it. But when I say that, I still buy some Marvel DC books. You know, sometimes you like that, but I'm tired of the whole industry being strangled into Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. So I do like it when you can find, you know, and like I said, Image, big plethora.
But you know what I was wanting to say, another thought that came in, back when we were kids, all of us probably, The way you found out about books was other kids either gave them to you or loaned them to you, or their mother said, oh, here, take these. Johnny can't have them anymore. And all of a sudden you got an instant comic collection. You find out about this guy and that guy. So now you go to the comic shop, and that's, you know, now, back then you got the books for free. Now you get, you know, somebody telling you about it. So it all works. It's all in the tapestry of comic book collecting.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of finding out things from word of mouth, here's a little music for you guys to check out.
Sweet relief. Don't be so glad. You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that was Steve Robinson and Ed Wattell. They're a local artist. We've played them many times before, but you can find them through the blog if you like the music. Anyway, that's all
that's
I got to say.
Sunshine Drenchy Records.
Yeah, there's several places. They're on SoundCloud. They're on CD Baby. They're everywhere. But
they're everywhere.
We'll post the link, and quite good.
All right, so what else you got, man? Any more funny books to talk about? I know you got a bag of tricks there.
Yeah, I do.
Stuff that you've been reading, because you don't have
a... He's looking at it going,
I'm trying to see
one
am
I going to pull out?
Yeah.
Nemo, River of Ghosts.
Now, we've talked about this before, haven't
well,
we?
Well, no, we've not... talked about the first one, and we've talked about the second one.
Yeah, not this one. No,
this is... It's kind of interesting, and you can think Rook over here. I never really read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Is that Captain Nemo?
Yeah, it's the captain, but it's about his daughter. What they did was after they did the Black Dossier, which is what Rook got me hooked on, which was basically the third collection of the book.
Thank you.
And then they did the fourth one, they did in three small books about Century. And Nemo was in it a little bit, but, you know, she went out. Yeah, she basically took over from her father. And after that, they did three small, you know, single issue hardbacks of her. And, you know, it's from the different stages of her life. Once she took over from her father. I can't remember the titles of the other two, but this is the third one. It came out, and it's fantastic. The first one basically dealt with the fact that she was starting out, you know, filling in her father's, you know. The second book, basically, it was talking about Nazi Germany. You know, it was talking about World War II, and they kind of made it, you know, a little more far out. But her daughter was out there fighting as well, and she was having trouble with the fact that her daughter was out there fighting. Well, they killed her husband, and she basically declared her daughter wouldn't fight anymore, and she was upset about wanting to revenge her father. And she told her, I said, you can't fight, but not today. So her daughter basically went out and decimated the whole, you know, Nazi Germany in this storyline. This one, she's an old woman. It's on the end of her life, and it's fantastic. I really enjoy these series. I just found the second volume of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and it starts out with John Carter.
Oh, he's in there.
Because they fight the Martians, and they're talking about it. It ties into the whole H.G. Wells stuff with the tripods and all that. And I knew that.
Is John Carter a public domain character?
They never say John Carter Mars. They just say John. It starts out, and
I got you.
I vaguely remember something about a character called Gulliver.
Yeah, Gulliver Jones, maybe, or something.
There's this guy shows up in this Arabic-looking attire with this really awesome face mask. And he shows up, and he walks in, and there's this guy that he doesn't look like any John Carter I ever saw. He looks kind of like Indian. You know, he's got this funny hairdo with the braids. And the guy comes in, takes off the face mask, and starts talking to him. He starts talking to each other, and he says Gulliver, and the other one says John. And that's all they ever referred to.
But you know who they are.
Well, there's Tharks all over the place, you know. Kevin O'Neill drew the Tharks differently.
Yeah, right.
So you know what a Thark looks like.
So he's kind of like getting away with using these characters by saying, you know who they are, wink, wink, nudge,
nudge. Well, Gulliver has a whole tribe of people that, you know, are dressed the way he is. I didn't bring the book because I haven't finished. I just started it. But he keeps referring to, I brought all these, and he's got a four-letter name for them. And basically, they're planning out their whole fight on these invaders. And it's the tripods came on Mars, and it ties into all kinds of stuff. And somehow they end up on Earth, and that's one thing John Carter and Gulliver is afraid of, that they were using them as a way to get to Earth. And anyway, I just know in the Black Dossier, they keep referring to the invasion. And that's where Big Brother starts in and everything else. Anyway, I've gotten to be the first trade of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It was okay. You know, Dallas lent it to me. Somebody else lent it to me. So I'd read it twice. I mean, it was good. I liked it, but not much. Black Dossier, I thought, was greatness. these Nemo stories I thought was greatness, and I finally found the second volume. Oh, it's just, you know.
Yeah, I've never been a huge fan of Kevin O'Neill, but this is some of the most beautiful stuff he's ever done. It's a really pretty looking book, man.
Kevin O'Neill was always hit or miss with me. Some things he drew I really liked, and some I just thought he's not that good. And I guess it's his style, and it's...
There's another British artist that was hit or miss, but I like his work now a lot more, called Cam Kennedy. He did work back, I think he was a 2000 AD guy or something like that, but now, like, you know, I've mellowed with age and I've learned how to enjoy it better, but that's really pretty stuff, you know. I mean, it's either he's changed it a bit for the book, but the coloring is really nice and the packaging of the book is really nice. Once again, you're probably not going to find that at a regular comic book store, which is sad because it's Alan Moore, but I mean, maybe you can. I don't know. I haven't been to a shop in a while, but Alan Moore's name usually means it gets, you know.
Yeah, Alan Moore's name usually means it can get shelved, but an odd story like this. See, I didn't realize.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known
this many. I mean, we've talked about this before, so that's why I was confused. I didn't realize there were more of these Nemo books.
I think it was supposed to be a trilogy. You know, I can't remember where I found the first. I found the first two in comic stores. The second one I bought in San Diego at a little store I went to. The second one I bought at another store, but I don't remember where. And this one I bought online. It just came out, I'm told, and I haven't seen it anywhere, but that doesn't mean somebody won't have it. What I find strange, though, is that the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was always a regular comic, and then they would, you know, sell it as a trade, and I'd gotten the hardbacks. And the Century, I bought in three softback square bounds, like, you know, Dark Knight or something like that, and a little thicker than those. It was about this size, but they were, you know, softbacks. These were always in hardbacks. I thought, why didn't they do the...
I didn't know anything like that. So it's put out by Top Shelf, right?
Yeah, a Knockabout
Alan
in the
Moore
United Kingdom.
Alan Moore does a lot with Top Shelf, yeah. I've noticed.
Okay.
But what he works with, if it's in Great Britain, it's Knockabout. And if it's here, it's Top Shelf, which is pretty cool.
All right, right on.
Yeah, which I was actually just curious of. I'm going through Top Shelf's catalog right now. And, yeah, this is not normal stuff you'd see sitting on the shelves. There's some out there stuff on Top Shelf. I'm gonna have to take a good look at this, and maybe we can talk about some Top Shelf stuff a little more here.
Yeah, they do nice work. They also they were teamed up with Two Morals. He used to do all the, well, still does the comic book artist and the Modern Masters alter ego.
Yeah.
They did a lot of work, and
I just found a book that to look into.
What is it?
It's a comic book adaptation of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas from Top Shelf. I think we found something.
Hunter Thompson. Who's the team on it?
Adapted by Troy Little.
Okay.
Let's see. Who worked on this?
Maybe it was just Troy Little.
That's the only name I'm seeing on it at the moment.
Well, there you go.
Just as a disclaimer, nobody on this podcast...
works
for Top Shelf.
Yeah, but if Top Shelf or IDW or Marvel or DC or Image would like to send us books to review,
we would be more than happy
to review your book fairly and squarely.
Yeah, that's it, fairly and squarely. So if we don't like it, we'll see. But
yeah, I think it's safe to say that, like, if somebody was to decide to send us a book, all four of us would read it individually and then give a collective review, so you get probably four very, very different opinions.
But as with a nail biter, I recommend people go out and buy it. So there you go.
Yeah, and I have to say, usually you kind of thumb through, like you mentioned. What piqued your interest to go back and read that? Because you did read it.
It was there. I go, you know, I've got to read
boredom.
This book. No, I said, I have to read this book. I mean, you know, I'll give it one issue. You know, if I don't read it, but if I don't like it, and I liked it, so I kept going with it. I gave it a shot, is what I think is what I'm trying to say.
Well, no, but I mean, and there are some times you do read things through, but a lot of times you get it and you kind of thumb through, you get a gist of it. And I was just surprised that you didn't care for the coloring and stuff, but you still went back and read it hard.
Yeah, I did, you know. It depends on the book, man. It depends on... with me, more so, I mean, the writing is so important, but to me, it depends on the artist.
Yes.
If the artist isn't taking me somewhere that I'm interested in, I will lose it. Again, I will obviously, like I said, I will lose interest in the book. The artist has to keep me interested in going like, wow, that's a cool character. Wow, that's an interesting way of drawing that. Or, huh, wow, I can follow this story really clearly. It's really, it really hinges on the art.
Yeah,
the storyline, well, the storyline is kind of like the art is kind of like the icing, but the art is like the icing, but the storyline is, you know, the basic storyline. But if the icing doesn't taste good to me, I'm not going to eat the cake.
Right.
It's sad, but, you know.
Yeah,
so
I think
that's
the dividing line between you and I and Rook and Dallas, because, I mean, we all like the artwork, but they're story-driven. And, I mean, I love the stories, we all do, but I can read a bad story if the artwork is awesome.
Me too.
Oh, I can swallow a bad storyline easily if the artwork is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been reading Marvel books most of my life.
Yeah.
Some of those are greatness, though.
Yeah, well,
at the same time, this is something Alan and I talk about a lot. There are some that they weren't artists I liked. You know, when we were talking about Tigra.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Giant-sized creature, the loose one, one of my favorite comics.
That is a good book.
And I never liked Don Perlin much, and I hated Vince Coletta, but yet that book is just magic to me. And if you ever listen to the show, you're going to see 12-year-old Don just bust right out.
I listened to that one.
We went into the whole. We read like 20 books each.
That was one of my absolute favorite episodes. And then when Dallas and we were on and we were talking about Man-Wolf, I'm talking like this the whole time. And, you know, we started talking about Steve Englehart's Avengers. And
I was going to try to do it again, but I just kind of like, I lost a little bit of interest because I couldn't find other books. I was going to do like, you ever remember a character called Bloodstone?
I may not remember the same Bloodstone you do, so...
He's been revamped. Basically, he was like this kind of like caveman guy, and this alien came to Earth. I'm going to really screw it up because I just read it once, and basically gave him these alien powers and turned him into like a higher being. And they asked him, hey, bring, you know, the rest of your tribe, and the tribe couldn't deal with all the, you know, mental powers they were given, so they all died, but he survived and he became like this eternal hunter and soldier.
I seem to remember a Bloodstone villain back in the 80s.
It might have been, but he's a good guy. I found an old reprint. I read it and I was like, oh, this is cool. And I started looking through a checklist. I'm going like, I can't find all stuff. Is it
basically, who published it?
Marvel. It was a Marvel character, but he was a secondary character. He ended up being in the Hulk paper, in the Hulk black and white book.
I think they may
that.
Have put a Bloodstone into the Thor books at one point.
There's a new
too.
Bloodstone though, and there's an offspring, but he's like a 10,000-year-old guy, and he's like a hunter, and I don't know. It was just, I was gonna try to do Bloodstone, but I just gave up on
it. I want to say the name sounds familiar. I mean, I've heard it in
I'll
reference,
find it.
But
I'll
that's all
it.
I know. I don't know anything else about him.
I'll find it. The book that I have, he's got like, kind of like longish hair, and he's got like some kind of like a, I don't know if it's a leisure suit, but he's got like a short sleeve shirt. It was interesting. It was convoluted, and it was hard to find the issues. I mean, remember when we do the Tigra, you were called, oh, do you have this Fantastic Four? Do you have this? And I had to go through a lot of my stuff, but it was great to find. I actually have a folder with all the issues, so...
Right, and that was so much fun. When you and I swapped back some of these electronic issues and read them, because I read some, but I hadn't read all.
And some were important, and some were just like, whatever, you didn't have to read them or whatever. You know,
man,
but it started with Marvel Chill. It started with Giant Size Werewolf by Night, right?
Yeah, well, when you brought up Giant Size...
No, it started off with the cat.
It started with the cat, and then they did the five issues, and I guess she was a Marvel team-up, and then she went into Giant Size Creatures 1.
And that's
Werewolf
when it changed
Night.
A lot.
Yeah, and she turned to Tigra.
And then it was Marvel Chillers. You found them.
No, unfortunately not. Whenever I'm in doubt, I, of course,
you
go to
the Marvel cards.
The Marvel cards, you know.
Yeah,
but
right.
No, the only thing I found that I was thinking of was a character named Blood Axe.
No.
Definitely not the same guy.
No, this is Bloodstone.
You know, this guy's wearing a big red mask and carrying a giant axe and stuff.
There's websites that talk about it. You'll see how convoluted it is. Yeah, he's got like long blonde hair, and he's just like wearing like, you know, I think civilian clothes if I remember correctly. But it was just it was funny because it was this Marvel. For like somewhere like around 2005, I remember seeing Marvel reprint books in Publix, And like I did, like I was a little kid, I went and go, hey, you know, can you get me this book? You know, I was with my mom, give me this book. You know, oh, yeah, okay, throw a comic book in there or whatever. And it was a reprint. I thought it was going to be all about him, but it was just first appearances of characters. I think it was him, and maybe Tigger was another one. I don't know. But I was like, it piqued my interest, but I gave up. You know, it's never going to match the Tigra, or Tigra, I should say, experience or whatever.
What are you talking about? I do have two things to tie in. I said I wasn't going to buy them, but I did.
You bought Hellcat. Oh,
I bought Patsy Walker, Hellcat 1 and 2. I liked the cover. Al and I mentioned it.
I
saw it on the stand, and I read it, and the artwork inside is fine. It's two women writing and drawing it. Basically, it's after Jennifer Walters, you know, the She-Hulk series that finished. You know, she worked for her as an investigator. Well, Jennifer couldn't afford her anymore, so she went on. So she gets a job working in the mall, like in a ladies' clothing store, a discount clothing store. And on the first issue, no spoilers, but she got fired from a 17-year-old manager. But the whole story in it was Hetty, which you mentioned on the Tiger.
Yeah, Patsy and Hetty. Yeah, those
were Well, Hetty, kind of find out, Patsy Walker's mother did the comic book stories about Patsy Walker and her friends growing up, which Patsy Walker wasn't real happy with. And I guess the mother offered the rights to Patsy Walker. She just wanted those comics to go away. And the mother gave the rights to Hetty, or Hetty bought the rights. And all she asked is to make sure these don't die. And Patsy Walker didn't fight it, but she thought just preserve the old books. Well, Hetty put them out as electronic comics, which ties into what we talk about all the time. Well, so you got all these young girls coming up to Patsy Walker in this clothing store with this iPhone device asking if that's her. And so you got a fight between her and Hetty all the time, and she's still Hellcat. And you talk about some of the supernatural things that she got, I guess, when she's married to Damien Hellstrom or whatever
it was.
Yeah,
she was, yeah.
So she can change into Hellcat. It's like this really cool glowing thing pops up when she turns into her. It's fun. It's a light comic. I bought the first one to see what it was about, and then I ended up getting the second one. But, you know, she's... It's what we talked about, where you're not making your money as a superhero, you know, and...
Yeah, and she's trying to survive this day job, and I'm just laughing.
And she has,
I'm sitting here thumbing through this right now, and this is just funny.
One of her best friends is a gay man, so I guess he's crashing in her apartment that she can't afford.
Yeah, her roommate that she was just talking to.
So it's got on. But
she's like, oh, I was dead once. You were dead. What?
Yeah, he screams that in the store. But it's funny.
We didn't read that, though, the one she married Damien Hellstrom.
I never read those. You told me on the show.
Yeah, we never read those.
Well, you know, since
then. We do everything.
Putting the blog, putting the blog together, I saw some of those West Coast Avengers. There's one cover which I'm not going to buy, but I would like to know. It has Tigra.
Tigra, let's just say Tigra.
It has her and Hellcat side by side jumping out at the reader, because I always wondered if the two ever met.
Oh, that is cool.
And Patsy Walker, you know, the Hellcat character, it's kind of funny and neat, but I always like Greer Grant Nelson. I really like the character. And, like I said, when Steve Englehart brought Hellcat, you know, Patsy Walker as Hellcat, they kind of gave her the same backstory, and she still talked to herself or thought to herself about...
Squirrel Girl?
Squirrel Girl is a comic book that's popular. I've seen it, but I've never read it, but it's a popular...
No, I know what Squirrel Girl is, it's just, I find it hilarious, so she's in this.
Yeah, at the end of the second issue,
Yeah, Patsy all these Walker. Female characters get together to go get burgers.
Yeah, it's got it doesn't have Thor. It has Valkyrie, She-Hulk, Squirrel Girl, several others I don't really know. It's a fun.
Well,
comic.
No, that is the new Thor.
Thor was in there.
Yeah, that's the new Thor. She's the new Thor.
Who was it? Valkyrie?
No, her name is isn't that that? Yeah, that's the new Thor, isn't it?
Oh, okay. I thought it was Valkyrie.
Well, no,
you're right.
This is Valkyrie, not Thor.
Okay, so I did think it was Thor at first. I think Captain Marvel's there. The new Captain Marvel?
Yeah, new Captain Marvel's here. She-Hulk's here. Squirrel Girl's here.
It's got a red, white, and blue woman. I thought it was supposed to be Captain America, but she is not. And I don't know who she is.
Yeah, I'm not sure who she is either offhand.
Anyway, it's a fun book. It's a lighthearted fun, and it goes along with She-Hulk. It ties into the same stories and...
Different artist, though.
Yeah, different artist. And who I like quite well, give a shout out. Who is the artist, writer?
The The artists and writers are... Hold on one second, I flip back. Writer is Kate Leth. Leth? Right? Am I pronouncing that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kate Leth, and then the artist is Brittany L. Williams. Interestingly enough, here's something I noticed immediately, guys. Remember, we've gotten into this conversation. There's a color artist as well here.
Yeah.
Megan Wilson. So, and then separate letters by VC's Clayton Cowles.
Mm.
So... But I find it interesting that the cover, the artist, and the color artist are different working on this. So
it's a team, man.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have color artists come in. Hey,
yeah,
I'll
not
tell
so
you.
Much anymore these days.
Yeah,
so.
you kind of he's
yeah,
right.
A lot of times these days, the artist does all the coloring and everything. So I find it pretty cool that it's a more of a traditional book being done with a trio instead of just
Now here's a weird question. Do they still put out like on the stands black and white comic books?
Yeah,
they still do.
Yeah, black and white still hit the shelves.
My daughter has some.
Walking Dead.
That's
yeah, it's black and white.
Yeah,
I thought they changed that up to a certain point. Oh,
I don't think they'll ever change that.
Oh, there you go.
They did a gag one time for Halloween where they like did color and they did aliens and everything like that at the end of the book, but it was just a Halloween gag.
But
it's always been black and white.
Yeah, but there was another. I can't remember what it was. There was another book that was black and white. I've seen. And it used to be you were black and white because you couldn't afford color. And I'm guessing color is maybe still more expensive, but a lot of times now they do black and white because that's what they prefer.
Okay. Trying to make a statement more than anything else in it.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Anyways,
anything
about
else?
Time? Well, I do, but I think we're about out of time till next time.
Well, we got more stuff then.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes. Can you talk about something in 10 minutes? Probably not. I know how we are.
There you go.
I'm going to bring one up. And I know Jim Johnson is going to be biting at the bit over this.
Jim Johnson.
Ooh.
Silver Surfer.
Last Days of the Silver Surfer. It's Mike Allred is the artist and Dan Slott, I think, is the writer.
Dan Slott, Mike Allred, yep.
What issue is that, 12? Is it
15.
15. All right. I like Mike Allred a lot, and because I've told, we talked about this on the show before, I've liked the Silver Surfer. I never liked him in a solo mag. I'm one of the few that didn't, I guess. Jim Johnson was on the show, which was greatness, but he hated the artwork on it. He said he didn't find Michael, Allred was a good artist as far as how he drew it, and that's fine. The stories I found really unique and imaginative. I've really enjoyed this series, and this 15th issue is the end of it. And,
wow.
It got really bizarre because Eternity shows up, and I guess because, I'm guessing it's tied into Secret Wars, where there was another world. And anyway, Norrin Rad.
Yeah, it's a Secret Wars issue.
But it didn't have any, I've never read the Secret Wars except those two issues of Captain Britain and Alan Davis drew. But it was a neat story, and it's like all the other stuff that he's been doing with Silver Surfer. He's doing all these odd time storytelling devices and stuff. Well, this and Norrin Rad, basically, and the girl recreated our universe and all these planets that Silver Surfer, helped Galactus destroy. He brought them all back. Well, then they had to make a choice between Eternity, who was, I guess, dying, or this other character that showed up that was trying to take Eternity's place with the new world. And I guess the girl brought back some dead relatives. A lot of stuff like this going on. So finally he... Red Rock the Seven is awesome.
Yeah, I know. I'm sitting here looking at this going, wow, this art is really familiar. Oh, it's because it's the same guy who did
Red
Rock
Mike
the Seven. Allred. I'm an idiot.
But no, you're not. It happens all the time. But... anyway, it was a series I really enjoyed, and I figured 15 issues is a good run. And then if you look at the last page on it, it says, don't worry, Silver Surfer's coming back, and Silver Surfer won.
Huh.
And I'm thinking, okay, it doesn't say anything, it's coming in January. Well, I said...
Remember when, books changed, but they didn't change the numbering? They just kept going on.
Yeah. Well, I walk in, I get this book, it was in my box, I didn't bring it with me, but... because I haven't read it, but the first issue, same creative team. And it ties into right there. It's like the story didn't end. It's still him and that woman. Dawn something.
But it's starting all over again at number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the title, but I guess basically this whole thing about the last days or whatever it was.
That storyline's done.
Yeah, the storyline finishes, but it has the same two characters stepping on into, you know, I mean, they still bring up the same kind of stuff that was happening.
And the same creative team, and that just doesn't make any damn sense.
Well, I don't mind what they did. I mean, I'm glad I still got the same book. I'm glad they have more stories, because this has been a fun comic. And Dan Slott is a really fun, inventive writer, and that's what I like, is he plays a lot with storytelling, but not to the point where, like an art comic, where you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, it follows you. Man, that's clever. And he's having fun. It's like the old comics we just talked about. Even though heavy stuff happened, there's fun things to happen.
Sure, lightness and dark.
And Mike Allred, I love, sometimes, you know, according to Jim Johnson, sometimes it gets kind of blunt, which, you know, I kind of agree with.
Well, he's no Ernie Chan, that's for sure.
But, well, Jim didn't like, because you know how sometimes when they draw the Silver Surfer, he has a lot of reflections and stuff on his, you know, rendering. And Jim Johnson enjoys that. I do too. And his Silver Surfer, it's like what he said, it's a guy in a white suit. You know, I still like it. I love Mike Allred. But anyway, it was a great series. Anyway, they renumbered it, and I that's okay.
Well, you're going to buy the new series.
Yeah, well, I got the first issue. I've read part of it, but I didn't bring it in because I haven't finished it. But
All right. Well, there you go.
It's worth reading.
There you go.
And,
probably available in trade paperback right now.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure right now they're just printing them up.
Well, 15 issues, which is nice. If you, like I said, if you missed it and you're interested, it's there. It's beautiful, you know. There's a lot of trades to get, you know.
Yes, sir. All right.
Okay, I guess that's all we got.
That's all we got for today. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure again.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. It's been nice. And if you get a chance, go check out Al's blog, Destination Nightmare. And if you get a minute and you listen to the show, please feel free to write us an iTunes review. It helps us out in the rankings.
You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah, if we were just talking to Rook, he's got an Android phone, and he says iTunes doesn't work for it, and he can listen to it on Stitcher, which I don't know why, but the episodes show up on Stitcher quicker than it shows up on iTunes. But, I mean, it does show up, and you can always go to the blog and listen to all 144 episodes of us.
And see all, and see all the pretty pictures that we post.
Yeah. So, anyway, in the meantime,
read more comics.
Oh, do you want to talk about Lock and Key?
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops.